The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio, let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
I'm really pissed off today for a lot of reasons. We were on the air as this horrible story broke out of Texas yesterday, and it's an unspeakable tragedy. And what I've heard since yesterday are a bunch of politicians and, frankly, people in the media who are using this in the most shallow of ways, using this purely for politics, faking compassion, acting like they know the solutions, gun control. We should always be having a conversation about guns. I'll get to that in just a couple of minutes here. But the reason I'm so angry today is because completely devoid from any conversation that I've heard since yesterday is not the issue about the mechanism for these horrible atrocities, but the reasons why. Why do we have so many lost and broken souls in America? We've had about the same number of guns on a per capita basis in America for more than 100 years. But things have dramatically gotten worse in the last 20 years, here in this 21st century. Why is that? Well, it's because we've had such a breakdown of the family and of society in so many ways. And that's what I want to talk about. I'm going to get to the politicians. I'm going to get to the guns. But Matt Walsh, I was reading what he had to say this morning, because it confirmed what I had been thinking. I knew what the family situation of this killer was before we knew his name. I had a pretty good idea, and everything I thought about him turned out to be pretty accurate. And what Matt Walsh wrote was, nearly all mass shootings, along with nearly all violence in our cities, trace back to kids raised in unstable families with absentee parents. Maybe we should talk about this. The media wants to talk about how and why a homicidal freak got his hands on a gun, but they never want to talk about how and why he was a homicidal freak to begin with. We take children and we, first of all, so many of them are in broken families. You know what it reminds me of? You know, I didn't write down any of this, so you're going to hear a lot of stream of consciousness from me today because I got a lot to say. We have the near complete breakdown of the family. Number of kids born out of wedlock. In this kid's case, his dad sounds like he lives in the same town, but sounds like he wasn't part of his life. He lived with his mom, a drug addict, and when mom cut out the Wi-Fi at home, the kid moved out to go with his grandparents. Being online was more important to this kid in his warped life than being with a parent. His phone was more important than a parent. Is that his fault? No, it's the fault of parents. If you use drugs instead of being a parent to your kid, and then we're all shocked that the kid goes wrong? Is anybody really shocked by that? So we have a kid with a drug addict mom who's plopped in front of a screen for probably much of his life. On that phone, he's had porn. I'm guessing there weren't any parental filters being used. He's had access to porn probably since he was 10, 11, 12 years old, where he can see men choking women as a part of having sex because we just dehumanize women with pornography. Do you know what that does to developing brains? Do you know what we should do to parents who allow their kids access to pornography at the most mentally, emotionally formative periods of their lives? Let's focus on that. I'll get to the guns. But you get an endless stream of shallowness. Because that's what the online world, that's what social media world, that's what it's about. It's about shallowness. There's no depth. There's no depth. There's no relationships. And then we have a society, a pop culture, schools that tell us that the highest order of being is we have to feminize men and masculinize women, both of whom don't even exist. We don't have men and women because gender is just a construct. So we shouldn't have dads and moms. No, no, no. We got fertilizers and birthing people. We've taken dads and moms out of life, according to the radical left. You have to be a biologist to know what a woman is. Like crap you do. You're just feeding people nonsense. And it gets accepted as truth, and it gets repeated by sheep in the media. And it's just endless. It's absolutely endless. So we have a bunch of kids with no moral foundation whatsoever. Their porn is a bigger part of their life than any mother or father. Sorry I use those words. I know I'm not supposed to. Then the kid starts acting up after having a lifetime of dysfunction. Oh, drug him. Drug him. That'll settle him down. I don't know if this kid was on drugs, but a lot of them are. And by the way, I'm not absolutist against the fact that a lot of kids have been helped by some pharmaceuticals. I'm not one of those, don't ever give any kid anything. Just have them run around outside. I know that there are a lot of truths in a lot of families that... so I'm not making a blanket statement about that, but too often we do shortcuts. You know, it's like the parent who's got a 14-year-old who does something wrong. That parent's been a lousy parent his or her whole life, hasn't been there, doesn't offer any moral guidance, wants to be a friend, if they want to be in the kid's life at all. They'd much rather be a friend than be a guiding force. Then the kid does something wrong. I'll spank him. I'll hit him. I'll straighten him out. Yeah, that's a great shortcut for 14 years of parental neglect. You know, it's a lot easier just to hit a kid when they're 14 than to spend 14 years building and nourishing and loving and offering guidance and offering boundaries. Boundaries. We're not supposed to have any boundaries. With Black Lives Matter marching in the streets demanding the end of the traditional Western nuclear family. Because family's evil and wrong. I had a teacher that I talked about on my show yesterday. A high school male teacher who went on social media to tell his kids how good it felt to wear women's panties to school. That makes the teacher cool. He's a social media hero. TikTok loves him. And the kids love him. Woo, you wear panties? That's the coolest thing I've ever heard. The teacher who mentions God or Jesus Christ in the schools. Gotta be fired. Fire him. It's all upside down. Our whole society's turned upside down. Parents and kids together sit and watch Kardashians instead of sitting and talking and nourishing each other and lifting each other up, being there for each other. Everything's a shortcut. So that brings me to the gun issue. Because every bit of nonsense that I've heard since yesterday is a shortcut. It's not, let's try to raise healthier kids. Let's try to raise kids who don't want to kill other people. Now, we got to take away the guns, which, of course, will only take guns away from law-abiding people. But it's a lot easier than talking about how, especially the party that talks about this the most, has done more to destroy the family than any place on earth. Ridicule. I'm serious. When you can't even talk about, you can't use the words mother and father. Dads are the butt of every joke in every TV commercial and sitcom. They're the clown figures. They're not supposed to be respected. They're not supposed to be revered. They're not supposed to be leaders of their families. They're the clowns. You goof on them. Ridicule them. Then we can all laugh together, and the kids can go off, tell their friends what an idiot their dad is. Yeah, mine is too. They're all idiots. We've lost respect for families. I'm sorry. Saying that we're all just on a spectrum, and we're all the same. We're just a little bit apart from all being non-binary. We don't got men. We don't got women. It's insane. Then you have Jay Inslee. Okay, Jay Inslee releases his anguished statement on Twitter last night. How ironic is that? That the ultimate short attention span is the vehicle for people to talk about how anguished they are by what has transpired here. But Jay Inslee said, this cannot be what normal looks like in America. Then he goes right to the gun thing. Governor Abbott may be number two in gun sales, but number one in causes for moral revulsion. In a tie with all those in his party who refuse to stand up to the gun lobby. I'm glad we're taking action to reduce gun violence here in Washington. You are? Jay Inslee, you're taking action? Because we have a murder rate in Seattle and King County and over in Yakima and the Tri-Cities that's all at a 20-year high. With you in your third term as governor. Why is that? Well, because we're the capital of America for attracting heroin and meth addicts. Because you, Jay Inslee, have made Washington the most criminal friend. You and your fellow Democrats in Olympia have made Washington the most criminal-friendly state in the United States of America. And out of that, of course, come many, many tragedies. You, Jay Inslee, have made Washington a sanctuary state. Do you remember 3 years ago when an illegal alien over in eastern Washington murdered 42-year-old Kittitas County Sheriff's Deputy Ryan Thompson? Do you even remember his name, Jay Inslee? Do you remember when Ryan Thompson's brother came on my radio show and told me that the family would not allow you at the funeral for their fallen law enforcement brother because of the role you played in the murder? When you embrace sanctuary, you have to take responsibility for acts committed by illegal aliens in your state. You say nothing about that. You don't seem to care about those deaths. Do you care about the thousands of fentanyl deaths that happened in Washington, Jay Inslee? Many of them to young people. Leading cause of killer in America for people between the ages of 18 and 45 is fentanyl. Do you care that you've done nothing along with your Democratic majority legislature? You've done nothing to fix. And it's an easy fix when the Supreme Court legalized all drugs in our state, including heroin and meth in personal possession amounts. Do you take responsibility for the fact that you and your party, which controls everything in this state, haven't fixed that? That we still have the drugs flowing in? That you support an open southern border? That you support the mules coming across from Mexico with Chinese-made drugs laced with fentanyl that are coming into your state and killing thousands of people? Do you grieve for them? No, You just don't like guns. So you're going to fake compassion for what happened in Texas. You're going to muster up some political will to say something about guns. You don't say anything about crime in the state. You don't say anything about the drug deaths. You don't say anything about illegal aliens kill. You don't seem to care about that humanity. But oh my goodness, you care about guns. And then there are people like Nick Hanauer, Seattle billionaire. Billionaire because he was a childhood friend of Jeff Bezos and he got in early on Amazon. And now Nick Hanauer is a revered radical leftist activist. Because he's a billionaire, he's revered by the radical left, which is ironic. I thought they hated billionaires. But Nick Hanauer, he's been in the studio with me. He's not a very bright guy. But he's also, we now know, just the evil that lurks in the man's heart. Right after the shooting in Texas yesterday, revered leftist billionaire Nick Hanauer went on Twitter to respond to somebody who said that we got to pray. Here's what Nick Hanauer wrote. Let me pray too. Dear God, please reach down in all your mightiness and give all of these Republican politicians terminal cancer. Let them die excruciatingly painful deaths and then chuck them into hell for all eternity. Amen. A man who doesn't believe in God, doesn't believe in prayer, posts a phony prayer to wish death upon his fellow human beings. It is evil like that that is far more corrosive than the gun issue. It is evil like that that creates the evil that compels so many people to be so empty, so absolutely devoid of morality or soul that they could go and murder 19 fourth graders. People like Nick Hanauer is far, far bigger problem in America than guns. That's the evil and hatred that needs to be addressed. That is the void that we must talk about. We have to talk about family. We have to talk about how somebody could be capable of being that empty. All right, that's your big lead for today. We're going to check the news for you, and then I will take you to Uvalde, Texas, where independent journalist Allie Bradley, she's been on the scene since yesterday. She remains there, and we will talk to her about all of this. That is coming up next as we get started here on the Dory Monson Show. A reporter who has been on the scene since this happened yesterday is Allie Bradley. You may remember her from Fox 13, but she is an independent journalist who just does fantastic work. You can follow it on Twitter at Allie Bradley TV. Allie joins us from Uvalde, Texas. Allie, thanks again for coming on with me.
Thanks for having me, Dory.
I can't even imagine a day after the cloak of grief that must hang over Uvalde, Texas. Just tell me what it's like there today.
You know, today you can just, the tragedy and the grief that these people are feeling is palpable. I mean, this is a small enough community that everybody knows everybody. There's only a couple of elementary schools. So all of these kids and parents, they all are around each other all the time. And so you can just see it on these families' faces that are, that live in this area that are walking up to still see a very active scene as Texas DPS and Border Patrol and the other agencies are out here looking for clues, looking for, things that they can use to piece together what really happened and why it happened. At this point, they still don't really have a clear motive of why this 18-year-old man came in and killed 19 children and two teachers after shooting his grandmother. So, from what I know from eyewitnesses and from people that went to school with him, this young man I talked to said that he went to school with him 2 years ago at a PE class with him, and there was no indication that anything like this would be possible, that he would do something like this. You know, so you see these community members in utter shock, I think is probably the best way to put it. And, you know, when I first got down here, I was one of the first on the scene simply because I've been covering the border issues for, you know, about 9 months. And so we had one of my sources had a child in the class. And by the grace of God, he's safe. Thank the Lord. And I actually went and just sat with them yesterday. No camera, no nothing. We talked about other things, you know, to keep their mind off it. I was with them till about 3:30 in the morning, brought this little rescue dog that I found up at Eagle Pass days before to just kind of keep their minds off of things a little and embrace the mom, because the dad, my source, is out of town. And so, you know, these communities, they do rally together. People are reaching out to each other. People are sharing information. They're helping each other where they can. The funeral homes here, the local funeral homes, are covering all of the expenses for these tragic funerals that these people inevitably will be attending in the coming weeks.
When you and I talked yesterday, we talked about the Border Patrol being involved, and I think there was some initial confusion about whether this was involved any kind of immigration situation or anything. It was simply the Border Patrol getting involved as a responding agency to help out a nearby town, right?
That is correct. And I mean, the confusion came from the community as well, though, because they're very used to these pursuits in these border community story. They have, you know, human smuggling and drug smuggling pursuits almost on a regular basis. And so when both of the eyewitnesses actually saw this happen, they thought it was a pursuit related situation because of what they see here pretty often. And it ended up obviously not being anything in close to that. And so Border Patrol is out here because it's a border community. It's not, you know, right on the border. It's not on the river, but it is an area where, again, people are kind of funneled through, trafficked through. And so there is a heavy presence of Texas DPS deployed under Operation Lone Star, which is the governor's efforts to secure the border. And then you have Border Patrol agents who I can confirm from multiple sources, a BORTAC agent, which is actually the SWAT arm, basically, of Border Patrol, was the agent who was able to subdue and take down that gunman ultimately.
So how fast were they able to get there, Allie, from when the first calls started coming in? Because they're still a ways away, aren't they?
Well, they aren't far. I mean, again, they're in Uvalde. A lot of these agents live in this neighborhood. A lot of these DPS, you know, troopers live here. They've been deployed here for years because immigration's always been, you know, a situation down here, albeit not at this level. But they've been down here for years. And I even talked to one border agent yesterday, said, that's my old community, but it's just too small. I had to get out and get a little bit more, you know, a culture around and things like that, because this is a tiny community for some perspective. But they're deployed out here. They get, you know, moved out here, stationed out here, and they live out here and they make these places their home. So when you say they're, you know, it takes a little while to respond. The outlying agencies like San Antonio, they had forces that responded. They had local sheriffs that also came in from the outlying counties. So those people, it took a little while. But I will tell you, when I look at the dispatch log, the calls came in around 11:40. They were, you know, moving and deploying within 5 minutes. I mean, they were on the way. And they were able to, you know, secure the perimeter, but it was, you know, unfortunately, that gunman had already, you know, caused some damage and gotten into the school. And today we're learning here from Texas DPS Lieutenant Christopher Olivares that they were actually going around the perimeter, these law enforcement officers, and they were breaking the windows of these buildings to help evacuate teachers and children to safety. So, you know, they were here in a pretty timely fashion. But again, you've got a guy with an AR-style weapon, you know, and you with multiple magazines loaded that they also recovered from the scene. You know, that's something that no matter how quickly you're there, it's going to be a challenge, I believe.
Yeah, no, of course. So what else do you know about the shooter? You mentioned that you talked to somebody who said that they didn't see this coming, but there were certainly, in retrospect, with the benefit of hindsight, there were lots of warning signs. He fought with his drug-addicted mom. He left that house to go to his grandparents when she cut off the Wi-Fi. Have you heard any mention of a dad in his life? Because I have not.
I have, from a couple of sources. I have not spoken to the dad. I've been told that he does live around this area, but, you know, they're kind of, I think what my sources have been telling me, that they're kind of, the parents are kind of in denial, you know, that there's no way that this could have happened. You know, there's another news source that talked to the grandfather. So, you know, his family is around in this neighborhood. And so, you know, it is one of those situations where those details are going to obviously unfold inevitably over the next couple of days. But right now, there's not a lot of, you know, a lot of those conversations aren't happening. And I don't know exactly where or who that dad is, but my sources are saying that he, you know, was living in this area as well.
I've also heard that the gunman was bullied because he wore clothes that made him look poor, that he had a job at a Wendy's. Do we have any idea? Because Wendy's doesn't buy this. Do we have any idea how a week ago, Allie, he had $5,000 to buy these guns when he, you know, everything else in his life was about poverty?
You know, I don't know. And I mean, Lieutenant Olivares today said he was unemployed. So, you know, I don't know where he would have procured those funds to be able to go out and buy guns. You know, a lot of people are saying, and there's multiple sources reporting that, you know, he went out and got that gun legally after he turned 18, shortly after he turned 18. So there's a couple of things, you know, I've learned where this potentially was, where he bought these weapons. So I'm going to do my best to get to dig into that and get that reported for you as well today.
Okay, and as for the incident itself, when we know that he was shot by law enforcement officers, are there any indications that he planned to go into other classrooms after the one where he killed 19, if the police had not taken him down?
You know, there wasn't. Actually, there wasn't. From the people I've talked to here on the scene, they didn't even believe that he was targeting the elementary school. The grandmother's house is just down the way, probably less than a mile from where this crash happened. And so he left the scene from where, you know, he had shot his grandmother and crashed this truck in a drainage ditch. And that just so happened to be adjacent to the elementary school. But a lot of people are saying that wasn't the target. And so, you know, it was, you know, a tragic, tragic situation that unfolded. And you know, I don't know what was going on in his head and things like that. But you know, there was a lot of talk from people I've been speaking to out here that are saying that, you know, he was more interested in high school because he would have been graduating this year. And so, again, you know, the young 18-year-old I talked to, had classes with him 2 years ago. He said he looks completely different than he did 2 years ago. He said, you know, that he was a heavier guy back then. And now, you know, he looks completely different 2 years later. He said he had not seen him at the school for 2 years.
Yeah. Well, it's just tragic on every single level. If people up here in Puget Sound area, Allie, want to help out the community in any way, have you heard of any solid ways to do that?
There are a couple of ways, and I've been posting them on my Facebook, and I'll do that to Twitter as well. The Uvalde Police Department is taking some donations for medical expenses if people want to help out that way. There is also a bank, a local bank here, that has also started a fundraiser to help with those costs as well. But again, these local funeral homes here are banding together and helping to cover the cost of the funerals.
All right. And Allie will be posting that on her Twitter. Once again, her Twitter is Allie, A-L-I, Allie Bradley TV. Allie, you do fantastic work, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Thank you, Dory. Be well.
Allie Bradley in Uvalde, Texas, this afternoon. All right, quick time out, and we're going to point out some more just absolute hypocrisy from people who are trying to use this for their political activism. Details straight ahead as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Text messages. You said you're going to talk about the gun aspect. I am, in the Fast 15. I will talk about that aspect of this. I also want to be a bit of a calming voice of reason in all of this because, as I said yesterday, schools statistically are still the safest place for a child to be in America. Believe it or not, even after yesterday. Safer than at home, safer than on the sports field, safer than anywhere. And I think turning our kids into even more anxious individuals by all this, so that adults can wage their war in the gun control debate, I think it's despicable. It's absolutely despicable. Child anxiety and psychological problems are so much increased in the last couple of years. You know, both the Buffalo and the Uvalde shooters were 18 years old after we talked about how shutting kids down socially and just putting them in front of a screen for 2 years, how, as I've said for the last 2 years, I think we will look back on this as one of the great moral crimes of our lifetime. I'm going to get into all of that in the Fastest 15, but especially the part about schools being safe and scaring children to the extent that politicians and media are trying to do today is despicable. Steve Kerr is the coach of the Golden State Warriors. He's somebody who is an unhinged far-left guy. Let me tell you a little bit about Steve Kerr, because he has gotten a lot of attention for his press conference yesterday. They were playing the Dallas Mavericks in Texas, and Steve Kerr went off.
I'm not going to talk about basketball. Nothing's happened with our team in the last 6 hours. We're going to start the same way tonight. Any basketball questions don't matter. Since we left shoot around, 14 children were killed 400 miles from here. And a teacher. And in the last 10 days, we've had elderly black people killed in a supermarket in Buffalo. We've had Asian churchgoers killed in Southern California. And now we have children murdered at school. When are we going to do something? I'm tired. I'm so tired of getting up here and offering condolences to the devastated families that are out there. I'm so tired of the, excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm tired of the moments of silence. Enough.
Okay, he's gotten a lot of attention for that. Steve Kerr has an armed police officer sitting next to him at every single game that he coaches. He has armed police officers escort the Warriors team bus to every visiting arena where they play. Steve Kerr has never turned down having armed security for himself. He's never turned it down. But when he says, when are we going to do something? Well, after Sandy Hook, the NRA actually worked with local school districts about one way you might be able to stop this is if you had police officers in the schools, if you have armed cops who could intervene. Now, that certainly is not a perfect solution. And we'll talk about the futility of let's remove all guns in the Fast 15. But here's Steve Kerr in 2020 demanding that cops be removed from the Oakland schools.
Warriors head coach Steve Kerr, known for his passion for civil rights, is taking his passion to the streets right now, joining students and parents in Oakland who are calling for the school district to part ways with its police force.
I think there's been a real reckoning for much of America, especially for white America.
Warriors coach Steve Kerr joined dozens of Oakland Unified School District parents and students who are calling for the district to dismantle its internal police force.
So he has armed escorts and cops with him at every NBA game, but he believes that cops should be out of the schools. That's Steve Kerr for you. Okay, lots more to come. Fast 15, next.